You are listening to Punk News Podcast, the show that goes by in a flash as we talk about en masse, about this week's news, flabbergast. That's right. We don't stop, won't stop, and always pop the news that you can use from the white and blue. And it is true. We are feeling good just talking to you. But yes, the election is through. And yes, despite what the Orange Goblin says, the results were true. And yes, you don't have to get all rah, rah, rah. But yes, let's at least revel in the fact that Satan's comb over will go ta, ta, ta. And he will not be missed. Now, I'm sorry for getting political and metaphysical and for even being hysterical on this digital platform. So let's talk punk rock nonstop until we drop or 11 hits the clock like a pitch from Dr. Spock. And the people here with a remedy is a person with the sense and knowledge of Dr. Beverly. Truthfully, you can see it's Bullet, comma, Hallie. And we won't forget the dynamite out of sight quite all right. Time is tight. Adam White, the computer man with the plan in his hand, playing against Sam. And of course, I'm Johnny G, feeling footloose and fancy free, just talking to thee. See, no trick up my sleeve. This is Punk News Podcast 516. Punk News Podcast. And listen, people, a lot of people have been complaining that we've been talking about politics. We're going to talk about just a little bit of politics today and then do punk rock. But we're never going to stop talking about politics completely because politics is intrinsically intertwined with punk rock. But listen, I know a lot of people don't love Biden, and that's cool. You don't have to love him. But at least let's just take a week or so, or maybe 2 weeks, and just enjoy the fact that the election went the better of the two ways. You know what I'm saying? Hallie Bullet. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?
I do. I mean, I don't feel quite like I can breathe like the sigh of relief that I want. I won't be able to do that until until like Emperor Cheese Doodle has moved his things out of the White House. But yeah, I'm feeling some relief for sure.
Adam White, how are you feeling up there north of the border? In Snowland.
I mean, I'm down a rabbit hole right now of whether Spock was ever actually called Dr. Spock on the show. I mean, like, I know people say Dr. Spock because like the 50s pediatrician that wrote all those books, but I don't know if Spock was ever actually given a medical title.
Yeah, it's Dr. McCoy Bones, but not Spock. Yeah, I think you're right. Mr. I never Spock. Thought of that.
Anyways, yeah. Okay. What? I am on the one hand happy for y'all and by extension, the rest of us, that we're going to maybe have some boring politics again. But on the other hand, that has not borne out in the past 3 or 4 weeks. So, come on guys, get boring.
Well, there you go. Well, listen, if there's one thing the Punk News Podcast is not, it's not boring. Hallie Bullet, we were going to talk about your letter writing, but maybe you're not in the mood. Do you feel like talking about your massive letter writing campaign? Maybe not.
No, I mean, if people are, what I will say is that when things were looking like questionable and it was really not clear if Biden could pull this off. I had called a ton of voters in Pennsylvania and Georgia. I had spent like a fair amount of time on the phone with voters from both of those places. And I will say it gave me just this little bit of that the whole time that, I mean, listen, we were all sweating it, but I did feel like in the long run that Pennsylvania and Georgia were both going to go to Biden. I just felt that in my heart because I had talked to so many voters in both of those states that were like desperate to get rid of Trump. So that was kind of like a good thing. I sort of felt like, I had like optimism even when the count was like still going on and things were really unclear. I had this like internal like kind of optimism about it, which was kind of cool to have.
What part of Pennsylvania did you call?
All over, but I think mostly right around Philly.
So, John, given the recent wranglings in the Philadelphia legal arena, I'm half expecting to hear about you know, like Giuliani and Gentile LLC forming and taking the case. I'm just curious, like as someone that is of the
save the world,
as someone that like is of the legal profession and of the legal profession in the state where all of these wacky legal shenanigans are happening, I don't want you to speak out of school about your colleagues or anything like that. I just want to know, is this fucking surreal for you?
Yeah, one of the many things that's surreal for me is that they would make such a colossal blunder as to book the Four Seasons landscaping business to the actual Four Seasons. But the crazy, like, it's like how stupid that Four Seasons landscaping is in North Philadelphia, which is a rougher area for sure. And actually, the place that they booked it is, I used to know a girl that lived up there. Like that's like a really rough area. Like really rough. And so it's like the incompetence is staggering, but also I think it's surreal how Rudy Giuliani went from being the guy that held New York together through 9/11 to this bumbling clown idiot that like everyone it thinks is a walking joke. You know, like the guy is really not doing well in his third act. You know what I mean? Like all he had to do was like, I made New York, I helped lead New York through 9/11, and now I'm going to ride off into the sunset. I did my duty. But instead, he's just completely nuking his entire career. And also, I wonder, like he is an attorney. I've been to court a lot, not as much as like a personal injury attorney or something, but I've been to a court, you know, hundreds of times. I don't think I've ever seen like an attorney as bumbling as Giuliani or some of the other attorneys in the Trump campaign. It's like, Is this the best they can get because they are so wacky, or is it that a lot of these attorneys really aren't practicing attorneys? They haven't been a practicing attorney for decades, so they've lost their skill. I just don't want people to think this is what law or most attorneys are like, because it's not like that at all. You know, so I don't know.
I also don't want it to go on record that he did such a like awesome. That I don't know. The 9/11 thing was weird because Giuliani was like so like really not, I don't know, to me at least, among the people that I knew, not a popular mayor. You would see pictures of him like spray painted all over the sidewalks and the lampposts and stuff with like a Hitler mustache. And then 9/11 happened, and yeah, he definitely got like to be the hero for a moment, but I don't know that he did anything so amazing to lead the city through that moment. I mean, I don't know. He got the rubble cleaned up and he posed for pictures. I don't know that he did anything so amazing.
Fair. I don't disagree with that, but would you give the public perception of him was at least that he was competent? You
know, yeah, definitely. Yeah. No, right, no. Right. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. Well, you're so, right. He could have just rested on those laurels for forever.
We're seeing like a weird parallel up here in Ontario right now, which is to say that like there is definitely this like they call it like a rally around the flag effect when there's a disaster and your leader is at least trying to handle it in a way that, you know, may not be like deft, but is at least, you know, on the surface competent. So you have someone say like Doug Ford up here in Ontario, our premier, who's you know, the big goon brother of famous Toronto crack smoking mayor Rob Ford, rest in peace. And no one on my end of the persuasion liked Doug when he got into office because he was, you know, he was a conservative and he was a dick. But when the virus hit, he seemed to at the very start of it like calm down and listen to the public health people and just, you know, talk to the public in a way that wasn't trying to like pull any fast ones or anything like that. And he got this strange amount of like begrudging respect from like everyone on all sides of the spectrum up here, where we're just like, especially when you were looking at, say, what was happening with Trump, where we're going like, you know what? Like, yeah, I don't agree with Rob Ford on any of this, but, or with Doug Ford and any of this stuff, but you know, he's doing okay. And like my wife and I even had that conversation. We're like, you know, this man has personally cost us money in ways that I could fucking itemize. But on the other hand, you know what? He's not embarrassing himself or us with regards to this problem. He seems to be keeping it together, and like everyone was kind of okay with them, and now they're not, because everything is you know, our curve's gone right in the opposite direction, and it turns out that the Emperor has no clothes there. But there was that moment where that's like, it seemed like there was a stable hand on the wheel, and everyone was just like, you know what, differences aside, sure, we're okay with him right now. And I wonder how much of that was like Giuliani's deal after 9/11. Like, you know what, he showed up and he hugged people and his pants didn't fall down, and that's what you needed.
well yeah, exactly. And but it was as someone that was not a fan, it was kind of mystifying to just look around and be like, wait, y'all don't remember that you didn't like him like a month ago? Like, it was. But yes, you're right. And well, especially now in this moment when there's so much incompetent leadership, I could see where if your leader is doing like sort like even an okay job, you're like, yeah, go, dude.
Yeah, it was weird because like it's like every day at 1 p.m. Ford would do a news conference here where he would, and he has a little bit of a of that like populist demagogue way of talking to people, right? But he'll get on there and he would just like he would look really, really scared. And he would look into the camera for a while, and then he would just be like, folks, I'm pleading with you. You gotta stop having these parties, right? And you just watch him and listen to him and be like, aw, like he's really terrified. Like, it was kind of endearing.
Why did he have a Boston accent?
I don't know. That's the accent I'm giving him. He calls us folks all the time. Folks.
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 It's kind of like how, what's his name? Black Sheep, Chris Farley's talks, you know? Anyways, listen, let's talk about what's important, how great I am. I'm going to brag. Here we go. Rudimentary P&I is a band that we talk about all the time on the podcast because maybe they're the best band ever. Maybe, I don't know. There's three people in Rudimentary P&I. The guitar player and vocalist and main lyricist, but not only lyricist, is Nick Blanco. Nick Blanco not only is an amazing musician and songwriter, but he's also an amazing, amazing artist. If you have ever seen his art, it's extremely unique, extremely hyper detailed and minute, astoundingly so. And so recently, a German book company, what do you call a book company? Publisher. Book company put out a book of his art, and Zagava Books is an extremely respected publisher that puts out, I guess, art books. That is, you know, books that are just a artist's collection of work or some of that artist's work. And they don't put out that many because, you know, these books are not like mass appeal kind of things. But they're things that they put in museums and stuff and use them as reference books. And like heavy duty art people, like people that like are into art and like, you know, academics, they rely on these books for reference and that kind of a thing. And so Zagava put out a book of Nick Blanco's art. It's just called Nick Blanco. And I got it, and I ordered it from Germany, and I got it on, I think Wednesday it was, or no, I got it on Tuesday, I think. And it is absolutely fantastic. Like it's not all of Nick Blanco's work because he has hundreds of drawings, but it's a lot of them. And it's a lot of the most well-known ones and some unpublished ones. And Nick Blanco's work is amazing. And in the back, there's kind of an essay, an academic type essay talking about how Nick Blanco's time in a mental institution influences work. And it also talks about how sometimes he will purposely go off his meds to, because he has to take a lot of meds. But sometimes you go off his meds to create his work, which is a whole thing in and of itself. And people have different views on him doing that. But anyway, so it's got this real academic essay, and I'm reading through it, and I get this one section, and it says only one music critic truly understood and got Pope Adrian the 37th psychiatric. And I'm like, oh wow, I wonder who that is. And it's like this one critic understood what Nick Blanco was going to for. In Rudimentary P&I's most complex and weirdest album, Post-Aging the 37th, which was mostly written while Nick Blanco was in the mental institution when he may have thought that he was Pope Adrian the IV. And so then they quote a big section of the review, and I'm like, damn, that looks familiar. And then I flip to see who wrote it, and by my word, who wrote that section and who is credited by Nick Blanco as the only person that's truly got the Pope Adrian the 37th psychiatric album.
Our very own Ricky Frankel.
That's right. me. So listen, people, I am quoting as an authority and not only a academic art book, but in an academic art book on punk. And so whenever I go to the house shows, when they start again in 2037, whenever I go to Cousin Danny's and people turn their nose up at me and say, oh, he's not punk, I'm just going to whip out this book and say, yes, I am. Anyway, you should buy the book because it's a great book. It was actually so popular. Like, the book literally sold out in like an hour. So they actually made it softback copies that are much cheaper. So everyone should go out and get them.
You should wear it around your neck on like a chain.
That's amazing. That's legitimately so fucking cool.
Thank you for saying it, Hallie. I honestly, like, I realize I'm bragging, but I am so thrilled and over the moon like about this. Like I can't even explain why. But like, this is probably like the second like highest like meaning to me with regards to my journalism career. You know what I mean? Like Nick, like, because Rudimentary Pete, like, just like this mystery, murky band, you know. And one person, they say this guy is the guy that got it. No one else got it, and it was me. And that and our most difficult album, and perhaps our greatest album. I was thrilled. So thanks for listening. Thanks for indulging.
No, shout it to the hills. Is that what you say? Shout it from the hills? Who do you shout it to and where do you shout it from? Well, anyhow.
You can shout it to podcast@punknews.org and we got some mail. This is from Bethany. Here's what Bethany has to say. Podcast, I listen every week and have been listening for about a year. I think the mix you have, John and Adam as being part of the website for years, and I really love listening to Hallie, who has, oh, I don't know, actual experience in music. This question is for Hallie. Hallie, as someone that has been in many great bands, is your music listening changed by the fact that you have been in bands and play music? Can you as a fan in this, I think what Bethany's trying to say is, can you as a fan listen to music the way you did listen to music before you were in bands? Please be on more. And that's from Bethany.
That's so awesome. Hi, Bethany. And thanks for that. Yeah, I mean, I think in the periods where I really like was writing a lot of music, I think I maybe my music listening had to slow down for a little bit. Like I had to just kind of like not listen to as much, or at least, you know what it was? I had to kind of move away. If I was writing a lot of punk, I couldn't be listening to a lot of punk at that exact moment. So maybe I was like listening to other genres of music, but no, it hasn't like, it didn't. I guess if what you're asking is like, did it make me more jaded about music as a fan, or did it make me like not as enthusiastic a fan, or no, like, no way. Like I'm just as much of a fan and a geek about other people's music as I ever was. But yeah, I think some other like songwriters would agree that maybe like in the moment that you're working really hard on writing an album, maybe you do slow down on taking in like other people's music, cause you got to just like keep a clear head maybe. But no, I mean, I still am like the same kind of music fan that I was when I was like 13, before I even thought I would ever have a band, you know?
Well, there you have it. This is from Herxon, long time listener and third time writer. Hello, this is Walt again. I haven't written in a while. I've been listening from the start. I think you could do more talking about new and upcoming bands. As much as I like hearing about the Dwarves or the Melvins or Attack in Black, I feel like you could put more energy into the new bands that we might not know about. The show is great, but where are all the big changes you talked about in 500? And that's from Herxon, or I guess Walt.
All those big changes got COVID, and then I
Yeah, listen.
No, hey, no, we still want to do that. John, I think we should still do the big changes. I'm not backing off doing the big changes. It's a matter of doing them, though, right? Like, we've got to.
Listen, man, we got COVID. Let's solve COVID.
We're trying to get to the next day right now, which is why the big changes are held off. No, I mean, like, we still want to, I think, reformat. And I think a part of reformatting is really thinking about what we're talking about each week and making sure we can do that in a way that's a little bit more engaging, a little bit less slapdash than it has been. And I think part of the delay in us not rejiggering, is that a word? You know, the show is that we don't want that to be a tossed off effort. Like it is to be something that is done properly, which is to say, like all the boring stuff that you would expect from like a properly done show would be in place. You know, we'll have a website for it. We'll have a place where you can go look at the show notes for each episode and, you know, get links to all the songs that were played and all the stuff that was talked about. Like, I see that all being sort of like a pretty nice kind of comprehensive thing. And I think part of the desire, at least on my part there, is that, you know, if we continue with this show into the scary future, we wanted to be sure that it's something that we can be proud of and not just something that we kind of do out of habit. So the changes are largely wrapped up in us having, I think, the moment to sit down and breathe and to structure it out properly. So we're hopefully getting to that stage, and I'm definitely feeling the itch to go kind of get it done, but it's definitely not something that we wanted to do in a way that is, you know, we didn't want to rush it just for the sake of, just for the sake of that we had 500 happen. So that is all to come. And I don't know, it's my intent to make all that stuff happen. And I think that a large part of what you are desiring is something that's going to be factored into that, where we will have a little bit more of a focus on, you know, stuff that we want to expose to people, as opposed to just, you know, stuff that happened. Although that'll still be, like, the news will still be an aspect of what we're doing, but, you know, we're working on the format is, I think, definitely part of it. So yeah, you know, bear with us, writer guy. It's coming. I want it to happen.
It's coming down the track, and you can always reach the podcast at punknews.org. Let's play a tune and then come back with some news. Who's got a tune to play?
Here, I'll go.
Go ahead, Adam.
I'll make this happen. Okay, we got a choice. Which one do I want to do of these two? Just do one next week, so I guess it doesn't matter. All right. So there's a group out of Montreal. They're like a psych punk quartet. They are called No Negative. They had a record that came out last year on Drunken Sailor, which is the UK-based label that for whatever reason keeps intersecting with my world, because they've released a lot of LPs from kind of like really cool Canadian punk bands. They did the UK release, maybe the worldwide release outside of Canada, of the LP from Chain Whip out of Vancouver. They released the last one or two records in Halifax's Bougie Boys over there. So anyway, so they released a record from No Negative last year called The Last Offenses. So the band is following that up this year with an EP that's coming out on November 26th, which is called The Darkening Hour. And it is a 4-song EP. It has three songs on the A side that are all B sides from various recording sessions. The oldest, which comes from 2015, and there's one that was recorded for their 2017 EP, and then there's a new one that was a B side from last year's record. And then the B side of the record features a complete 5-minute reimagining of Louie Louie, but with new lyrics and vocals from this kind of like crazy Montreal provocateur, like, I don't even know what you'd call him, like weirdo lounge singer guy named like Bernardino Femmelini. And I really want to hear that, so I don't have that to play you right now, but I'm going to play you something from the A side of this. So the song I'm going to play is called Upside Down World. It's from No Negative out of Montreal. There are serious Talking Heads vibes in this one. A little bit more aggressive than Talking Heads, but like you can totally hear it in just the vocal delivery. So here you go. This is Upside Down World by No Negative. We'll be right back.
see a world of hostility. You see a man begging on the street. You see a man trying to make some money and eat. You see a man getting rich on Wall Street.
What do you see? What do you see? What do you see?
Look to the left. Look to the right. Do you see the same struggle? Do you see the same fight? We all have our own narratives to make sense of our fight. What do you see? Then I realized that you and me are staring out the same window, but it's not the same thing we see. What you see is different from me.
What do you see?
And that was Upside Down World by No Negative. You know, I just really got into Talking Heads about 8 months ago. I was never really a fan because it always sounded just kind of like, I guess the 80s production got to me. But now that I'm a fan, it doesn't sound like 80s production to me. Anyway, Talking Heads, friggin' rule. People should check them out. Let's crack into the news. And speaking of the 80s, here's something from the early 90s. Morrissey is putting out a new 7-inch of archival material. The 7-inch is the famed cover of Cosmic Dancer, with recorded with David Bowie on tour. I think it's 1991 or 1992. Morrissey previously actually released a live version of this on, I think it was the Suede Head single, or November Spawned a Monster single, or We Hate It When Our Friends Become Successful. One of those early-ish singles. He already had a live version of this. But this is the one recorded with David Bowie on tour. This is interesting for a lot of reasons. One reason that is interesting is because Morrissey, of course, is a gigantic David Bowie fan. And he toured with David Bowie, I think it was 95 or 96. But I think they actually kind of had a feud and didn't get along. So it's interesting that this is coming out now, I guess. Also, he was going to put out a single that didn't have David Bowie on it, but it had him and David Bowie on the cover. And the David Bowie estate nixed that. And so he put a picture of him and Rick Astley on the cover, too, to Rick Roll, I guess, people. So this is coming out. And, of course, these days, you know, more people have a lot of varying opinions on Morrissey's. Most of the punk news readers and music readers in general kind of are thumbs down on Morrissey, considering his recent statements of the past 5 years. Although some people are remaining fans, I'm surprised that the David Bowie estate actually did okay this. I wonder if maybe they didn't have control of that recording, and that's why this is coming out. Because I was somewhat surprised, considering how David Bowie's name is somewhat spotless in the 2020s, and Morrissey's name definitely isn't. I was surprised that the David Bowie estate, I guess, let David Bowie be associated with Morrissey now. But maybe David Bowie didn't have control over it, or maybe they said, well, you know, this was back in the early 90s before all that stuff happened. So that's where we're at. Should people check this out? Should people be excited about this, or is the cake toast at this point?
I mean, it was interesting to listen to, right? It's like, oh, wow, it was Morrissey and David Bowie singing a T-Rex song back in the 90s. I don't know. I find this like kind of obnoxious, honestly. If he had a falling out with David Bowie and he's been fighting with David Bowie's like estate, and it's a song that he already put out a live version of, it's not his song. It reminds me of that thing where remember when he was taking other people's album covers and just signing Morrissey on top of it and selling it? It reminds me of that. Like, he's just, I don't know. I just think he's a hack now. He's just like, he's just trying to me, like, I think this is interesting to listen to once, but I didn't find it like musically like that super exciting. And it bothers me that Morrissey is making money off of it. That's my take.
I'm curious to see what what Morrissey, how Morrissey floats through into the next era of his career, because this comes right on the heels of the news that he was dropped by BMG. And that was making the rounds because Moz, of course, didn't take it he didn't take it with any poise or grace. He decided that he was dropped because he doesn't fit the diversity requirements that BNG is now inflicting upon him and the public at large, I guess. So this popped up like a few weeks after like the latest. A week maybe after the latest controversy on his part. So I'm not sure if that's coincidence, if that's a bit of a diversion from the latest spate of bad news, but I'm curious to see where he ends up and what he does. If only that I'm curious to see who decides to work with him. I mean, you kind of hit it on the head when you introed this, is like he keeps throwing, you know, gasoline and skunk stink all over his name. So I'm not sure where he ends up in a way that's going to, you know, please anyone, let alone him. So I don't know, this cropping up is interesting. I mean, in and of itself, divorced from the history and the current controversies that Morrissey's always involved in, I mean, like, the track is fine. It has that strange quality of a live recording from a stadium where there's constantly people shrieking like they're seeing the Beatles in like 66. And I can never wrap my head around, like, I find it completely distracting, like, where I never quite figure like what that person is doing. And this is maybe because I don't go to those kinds of concerts, but like there's parts in this, especially where Bowie pops up in the track, where there's just someone in the background just like wailing, just like the whole time. And I can't put myself into the crowd and be like, hold on, if I'm like two over from this person, do they just go for like 3 minutes, or is this like the community? It's like some sort of cumulative effect where there are multiple people that are wailing for maybe like a second, and it all just like melds into one giant 3 minute scream. It's the weirdest thing for me to hear.
Well, also, can we talk about the sheer absurdity of like someone who is like definitely, you know, like on the decline in terms of like his career and his popularity, and someone who said so many things that have upset people and forced fans to turn their back on him, and someone who is constantly canceling shows. And he's going to say that he was dropped by his label because of some like a problem that he has with affirmative action. I mean, he just makes me so angry. And I named my band after a Smith song. I literally named my punk band after a Smith song. And now I just like this. Oh, this guy just, he angers me.
Well, listen, I'll admit it. I'm torn with Morrissey. I'm a big fan. I thought his last album was fantastic. I'm Not on a Dog on a Chain. I think it's his best thing since World Peace, World Peace came out just before he went like sort of sketchy, and I thought that album was amazing. The ones after that were not that good. I thought I Am Not on a Dog on a Chain was an excellent, excellent album. But I just wish he would say, like, he's always talking in abstractions or vagaries, if you will. And it's like, well, what are you actually saying? Will you just come out and say it? You know, at least Lydon came out and said it, which bummed me out. At least Ice Cube came. So actually, no, Ice Cube didn't come out and say it. I'm going to talk about Ice Cube in a second. And so we're back to the old thing again, separating the art from the artist. I thought the track, I'm always a big fan of archival releases. Any band that I'm a fan of, if it's at least somewhat decent and not repetitive, then I want it to come out. So as a fan of the music itself, I'm glad this is coming out. I think it's cool. You do have to give Morrissey credit in that he puts out a lot of neat singles and interesting B-sides, especially before, you know, he became somewhat sketchy. Like, if you ask me, most of his single slash EPs are actually kind of better than his albums. A lot of really cool tracks. And so once again, we're faced with the thing is, well, if somebody's being somewhat sketchy, should we write him off? You know, and I don't mind that he's a flake, and I don't mind that he cancels concerts, because I've had Morrissey concerts canceled on me. I kind of think it's funny that he is such a diva. I think that's what he is. And it doesn't bother me when an artist is selfish or weird or even says some things that are kind of whacked out. But when they cross the line, that's when you got to reevaluate it. And for me, Morrissey's been dancing on that line a while. And it's actually, he's kind of shut up for the past year and a half, you know, so maybe he's like, is that a good thing? If your favorite artist has abhorrent views, do you want them to say them so you know what it is? Or do you want them to just, you know, keep mum so everyone has to pretend that they don't believe that deep down? And there's a lot of artists out there, especially in pop music right now, but even in punk rock, that have exceptionally abhorrent views. And I think people in the back of their mind know that, but they're just not saying it. So everyone's like, oh, this person's cool, you know? But also, it's come down to
the thing. They're not saying it, at least. No, go on.
What I was going to say is, but there's also the thing is, there are people who have done bad things, and there are people that have said bad things. And I think doing bad things is worse than saying bad things. But that doesn't mean Morrissey gets a pass. It means I'm on the fence, and I haven't decided to give up on him, particularly because I'm not going to get in the ring and fight for him. I mean, 5 years ago, I would have gotten in the ring, and you know, when people say, oh, he cancels shows, oh, he's a diva, oh, he's a flake, I'd be like, you just don't get his genius, asshole. But I'm not gonna fight on his behalf anymore just because he's dancing way too close to that line. That being said, I'm not going to lie and say I didn't like the last album or I don't like a lot of his recent singles. I think a lot of stuff is really good. So I don't know, man. I don't know. What are you saying, Hallie?
He can cancel shows all he wants. I don't care. That's his right. But he can't like be a general pain in the ass to everybody and then complain that he was dropped by his label because he has a problem with diversity. I mean, it just it's so annoying. Isn't that so annoying to you?
What's amazing to me is that, like, yeah, okay, John, is that annoying to you first?
It's not annoying to me that he's selfish and a prick and is a jerk, because in his songs, he says, I'm selfish, I'm a prick, and I'm a jerk. Like, I think a mistake a lot of people make is that they say Morrissey is a nice person, that he speaks to my heart, and I'm a good person, and I'm a sensitive person. Morrissey is sensitive, but being sensitive doesn't mean you're nice. If you listen to a lot of his songs, he's very mean in a lot of his songs. We hate it when our friends become successful. Tony the Pony. He's got a lot of real. One of my favorite songs, Wielding a Bicycle Chain, where he talks about going around beating people up with the bike. What that song is. Such a little thing makes such a difference. You know, he's not nice in a lot of his songs, and he's very weird in a lot of his songs. Ganglord, which I love that track. That's what I love about Morrissey. I don't expect Morrissey to be nice. So that being said, do I think that makes him a good person or a moral person, or would I want to be friends with him? The answer is no, because I think he's weird and it's insufferable, you know. But but doesn't mean he's not a great artist. I mean, let's look at an example like Lou Reed, total dickhead, amazing musician. You know what I mean? But do I think he gets a the diversity comment is an issue, because he didn't even need to say that. He could say, all they want is, you know, electronic musical backing with no real talent. I'm a real talent, and that's why I'm getting fired, you know. But he throws in that diversity thing. Goes back to the thing, is Morrissey racist? Like, Morrissey, why do you keep floating that out there? You know what I mean? Like why?
Yeah,
why?
Well, that's
because
just
he's racist. He's definitely racist. That's why.
What's baffling about this is I was just kind of like reading through the chain of how that all happened in the Variety article about it. And this is like the controversy was caused by Morrissey. So like BMG never released a statement that said, we're dropping Morrissey. Morrissey posted to his website, a rage letter that he was being dropped by BMG and then blamed it on diversity. And then Variety reached out to BMG and it's like, are you dropping Morrissey? And then BMG released like a, you know, our 3-album deal has now come to an end. We wish him the best, right? Kind of like, you know, corporate speak statement about it, right? But this was not like Morrissey didn't need to do anything. Like he didn't need to post one thing or another about his record deal, let alone his theories about it being due to diversity mandates or whatever, right? He could have just like released his next album on whatever label it would come out on, and the 90% of the universe would not give a shit, because who cares about labels these days? And but he chose to run this news into the public and to attach this diversity albatross to it. So I mean, I on the one hand, like, yeah, like I definitely appreciate Morrissey as an artist and for all the things that he's done and all that, but man, he just like, he digs his own holes.
See, but that's what I love, that he's like, BMG are a bunch of dicks because they fired me. Like, he didn't have to say that, but he did. And that's the odd and diva behavior that I like about him. And I think that is what makes his art great. And that doesn't bother me at all. I mean, if I was like friendly with him, if I knew him personally, I would hate his guts, I'm sure, you know. But that's not what annoys me about Morrissey. I love his diva behavior. I think it's funny and weird and interesting and makes for good art. It's the racist thing that gets sketchy. And as Hallie says, well, he probably is racist, you know, so.
Oh, Morrissey. You dick.
Oh, Morrissey. All right. We're still talking about him. Listen, let's talk about a band that's not racist. Let's talk about a band that has been around for longer than Morrissey, has put out more albums than Morrissey. And Morrissey has put out a lot of albums, but has still held true. That is still kicking ass. That we still talk about all the time on the Punk News podcast. And to their credit, instead of feuding with David Bowie when they could have been pals, are still friends with their childhood friends. That's right, the Melvins. They're putting out a new album and a bunch of new reissues. We won't even talk about the reissues because, you know, they're cool, but we will talk about the new album. The Melvins are putting out an album called Working With God on February 26, 2021, via Ipecac. And this is the Melvins in their Melvins 1983. Is it Melvins 1983?
Three.
Yeah, Melvins 1983. Melvins 1983 persona. The Melvins in their 1983 persona is founding member Buzz Osborne on guitar and vocals, founding member Mike Dillard on drums. Mike left the band in 84 and 85 and became an electrician. And usual drummer Dale Crover, who joined the band in about 85, he's not on drums. He's on bass. This is the second Melvins 1983 album. And I will say, you can say a lot about a person if they're still friends with people they were friends with when they were in high school, middle school, elementary school. I think Buzz Osborne's been friends with Dillard since like elementary school. And so it's cool that they're getting back together again for another album. The first track is a mock Beach Boys track. It's called I Fuck Around. And I dug it. And I think it's funny and weird, like Morrissey, except for it's not sketchy and it's funny and good punk. And I've said it before, I'll say it again. If you want a band that is not ultra famous, but is kind of famous, that has made pretty much all the correct artistic and business moves, we're talking the Melvins. And I'm excited for this. The only thing you can hit them with is maybe they put out too much stuff. I mean, this year they put out like four EPs or five EPs. And like last year they put out like a bunch of albums. So maybe there's too much material, but I'll take that over like nothing, like over too little material, especially when it's high quality. So I'm excited.
John, I don't really brush off your Melvins fandom because I can't keep up with it. Like, you know, if there was a Melvins release, you know, even every year, I could maybe follow along. But at the rate that they put things out and the various permutations of the band, I normally can't at all pay attention to what's going on. And you know, I'd have to give up one of my two kids to fit all the Melvins details in. But I was feeling all this stuff earlier. I Fuck Around is dumb. I mean, it's super fun, but it's dumb. And I don't know how. I don't know how well that'll age once the initial joke of it has been processed by my brain. But you know what? In an hour before this podcast, I was trying to clean fucking red and blue paint out of the carpet because my daughter decided to dump it all over the floor in my office. And I was listening to that and I was like, I'm enjoying this ridiculous, you know, the overlong Beach Boys cover. I'm down. And then Bouncing Rick, the second one that is maybe a more traditional, you know, grindy Melvins song is kind of the mood I'm in. So I am for once actually interested in one of your Melvins things. So I'm going to pay attention to this one. That said, I couldn't tell you which of the 600 releases they've released in the past decade this relates to or sounds like or et cetera's from. But not my problem.
I don't even have anything to add. The Melvins are, I have respect for the Melvins, but it's musically not my thing. So I feel like you guys are more qualified to talk about this in an enthusiastic way than me.
Well, here's something that is also very divisive. And I was actually surprised by the Punk News commenters. The Punk News commenters got in a huge battle over this, and I was surprised. And maybe it's time for my own reevaluation of this particular artist. And who is that artist? Miley Cyrus. She's putting out a new album. The album is called Plastic Hearts.
Yeah.
And the cover of the album is an homage to Wendy Williams and the Plasmatics, which might be interesting. It looks like she might be wearing like a Jello Biafra t-shirt on this cover. I'm not sure. It looks like it is like not a Jello shirt, an alternative tentacles t-shirt. Anyway, on the album, she does a track with Joan Jett called Bad Karma, and she does a track with Billy Idol called Night Crawling. Of course, earlier in her career, Miley did a cover of The Replacements' Androgynous with Laura Jane Grace, Joan Jett, and one of The Replacements themselves, I believe. No, actually, no, that's not true. Anyways, so what's interestingly is at least the general punk news when Miley first, I guess, started doing non-traditional pop stuff and was hanging out with the Flaming Lips, it was nonstop hate in the punk news comment section. Like, oh, Miley, she's just some pop star's kid or country kid star. You know, she's Hannah Montana. Get it out of here. This is garbage. Don't give me this. Now, Miley has put out like 4 or 5 albums, albeit promoted in a pop type way, but the albums themselves are not strictly pop. She had one called like All My Dead Pets or something that was relatively experimental. She did an album basically with the Flaming Lips. And that's a whole thing. We could talk about Wayne Coyne and Flaming Lips if we want to. And now she's putting out an album with actual punk or punk-related musicians. I mean, of course, Billy Idol is a pop musician, but I mean, he was a punk, and I think he still should be considered a punk. Joan Jett, I think she's kind of before punk, but I mean, like, you can't question Joan Jett's bona fides. I mean, Joan Jett is the deal, you know? The big battle in the punk news comment section was a lot of punk news readers were actually arguing on behalf of Miley Cyrus, and they're saying, we think she's doing interesting things, while the other half were saying, no, you're getting suckered by marketing. This is just more marketing or some rich guy's daughter just trying to buy her way back into fame, and this is not interesting. You're just a pawn in the game. So those are the two battle sides. Hallie, did you come down on either of those two sides, or maybe you didn't?
I'm like right in between both of those. Cause I do think she does interesting stuff. I think like in terms of like as a like role model for little girls, I do like that she kind of like broke out of that like perfect pop star mold, which I don't think is like, you know, it's so limiting, you know? So I appreciate that she tries to do new stuff. I just like, I don't, like none of us know her personally. Like we can't know what's in her heart. We don't know if she actually likes the stuff that she pays homage to, or if it is like a marketing thing. I mean, I think like her new single is very like 80s. I mean, in the video, she kind of looks like a cross between Billy Idol and Joan Jett, honestly. And then the song itself reminds me of like very 80s, like Stevie Nicks stuff, like Edge of 17. Like that era, like Stevie Nicks. So like, I do feel like you hear in the music where she is definitely, she has to be taking in some of this like 80s stuff, because you hear it in what she's doing. But I don't, you know, I don't think any of us, it's funny to me that people are debating this, because like, we can't know if Miley Cyrus, like, we can't know how much of it is marketing and how much of it is that she has a personal passion for this stuff. Unless, you know, maybe someone can write in, someone that knows her, but I don't know.
Whenever there's a story like this, I have to check myself, and I always come back to that longstanding thing that we've talked about on this show, John, and this is maybe like a you, me, and Tom conversation, but just about like available time in the day for something, where I'll go and I'll look at this, I'll see the controversy about it, I'll see all the back and forth, but then when I go, you know what, do I even need to field whatever is coming out of the Miley Cyrus camp, or should I just devote my energies to like any of the 50 billion tiny bands and artists that are always out there trying to fight for something? And like, do I need to participate in the conversation one way or another with regards to whether what Miley Cyrus is doing is worth paying attention to or not? Whereas I should probably just not, and just go listen to some, you know, noise band releasing a cassette tape. So that's where I'm gonna go on this. So like I never get worked up about these things. Like I have no problem with Miley Cyrus releasing an album with some punk iconography on it, and you know a couple punk names involved. Like, you know, like all the power to her. But I'm not sure it has in any way earned my attention by having those individuals involved. But that's where I'm going to go.
Well, I have a slightly different take than both of you in that I think I'm allowing myself to be brainwashed. The mere fact that Joan Jett and Billy Idol are on this record, and the mere fact that there's a Plasmatics logo-ish on the album cover, my interest is peaked. I will check this out solely on that. And I'm not opposed to genre clashes or making weird or unusual records. I mean, honestly, like if you came out with an album that was basically a Joan Jett album, but you're not Joan Jett, is that really that interesting? It'll be cool, but it's not going to be amazing. But if you take the foundation of Joan Jett and Billy Idol and these other artists and warp that into something new and fresh and weird, that could be very interesting. And you can make the argument that like Tegan and Sarah's pop album, was it Closer? It was the one after the
Closer.
Yeah, it's Closer.
Closer.
Yeah, I love that album. And I think that's kind of a really awesome pop record that isn't really a pop record at its heart. So I think there's real potential here. And without even having heard the album, I'm constructing what it could be really cool in my brain. So I'm going to check it out. Maybe I'm falling prey to marketing, but maybe that's okay. But what I was going to say is I can't remember what I was going to say now. So anyways, yeah, I mean, maybe I'm checking myself here. I was kind of anti Miley Cyrus because like when she was hanging out with Wayne Coyne and he was being kind of creepy, like he was doing the Kim Fowley thing. He's like, you know, I'm being creepy and I know I'm being creepy, but you can't pin anything on me. So I'm just going to keep being creepy and keep smirking at you. And he's got like 17-year-old Miley Cyrus right there. It's like, why is this like 55-year-old dude hanging around the 17-year-old girl all the time? You know? And so I'm like, this is not my, that turned me off. I still like the Flaming Lips, but my fandom of Flaming Lips went down when he started doing that. Not because Miley Cyrus was involved, but just because, like, he, as Adam put it, he was very pleased with himself, Wayne Coyne, that is. And so I kind of attributed that to Miley Cyrus and that this is just, you know, marketing, large, you know, major label marketing. But on the other hand, major labels have put out amazing music, and you can't deny that. Here's where I was going with this. Hallie mentioned Stevie Nicks. In the past, like, 2 or 3 years, I've really gotten to Stevie Nicks' first 3 solo albums, which I dig a lot. And I'm willing to wade into these waters. I want to check it out. Oh, but here's where I was going with this. Here's the problem. Here's the threat. When the regrets were getting big, like a lot of people, you know, my age were like, oh, the regrets are so good. You know, the regrets are so good. And so I listened to the regrets and the singer, she's a great singer. But like I'm listening to it and I almost feel like creepy. I'm like, this music is not for me. This music is for like women generally or whoever. 16, 17, 18, 19, 15. And I'm listening to this as someone in their 30s. I'm like, it's weird for me to listen to this because I'm not the target audience. And certainly you can gain perspective by listening to music that is not written for you. You know, like Stevie Nicks' music is not written for me, but I love Stevie Nicks' music. And you gain somewhat, I don't want to overstate it, but you do gain a greater understanding of the world when you listen to music not written for you, if you will. But that being said, when I listen to the regrets, I'm like, this is pop music that has been written by songwriters, not just a band, to specifically appeal to 16, 17, 18, 19-year-old girls. And it's weird for me to listen to this because like it just seems off. So And maybe if I was a bigger fan of the music, I would have stuck with it. But like, this is weird, so I'm not gonna listen to it anymore. That's the issue that I have personally. Like a lot of this stuff is like, I see a lot of people say, oh, you know, this pop music is so good, and it's almost as if they're trying to prove something to everyone to show how universal they are. But like, even though I'm a man in his 30s, I can appreciate music written for 16-year-old girls. Well, maybe it's not healthy to like really revel in music made for 16-year-old girls. Like, maybe there's nothing you're going to really get from that except for a certain aura of creepiness. So that's the trepidation I approach Miley Cyrus with. That being said, man, the Plasmatics logo, I'm not even a Plasmatics fan, but I like that she's using the logo. But Joan Jett, Billy Idol, I'm going to give it a spin and report back. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you, John. Like, like, why not check it out? Because it might be great. And also, I don't like the resistance we all have to, like, why are we so skeptical and so quick to like question or dislike artists reinventing themselves? I mean, I wasn't born punk. I listened to Cyndi Lauper growing up, and she's like, you can say she's like on the edge of punk, but like, I don't know, what other poppier stuff did I listen to? I don't know. I was on the school bus, like bopping my head to all kinds of like horrible pop music. So it's like, why, you know, in a way, why should we be so cynical about it? Why can't she be growing older and having a legitimate excitement about other genres of music? And, you know, like, why should everyone be so quick to poo-poo it or assume that it's like surface, you know, that it's like not real or whatever? I don't know. I don't know why we, and also just to your point of like, I don't have a problem with older men being into the music of younger women or even girls if it's coming from the right place. Because why shouldn't we respect them as artists? Why shouldn't you as an older dude? Why shouldn't you be able to like respect music coming out from young girls? Because if we write it off as just being for young girls, then like, isn't that like so, I don't know, isn't that so like condescending in a way, you know? Maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I would say so. I just get creeped out. I think when you see dudes in their 30s, they're like, oh, you know, like Taylor Swift is a bad example because she's like 30 now. But like some girl or young woman that's like 17 or 18, they're like, oh, this is so good. And the song is like, I like my boyfriend. I like driving around in fast cars. You know, and it's clearly written like in the pop. It's like, why are you listening to this? You know what I mean? And not to say that 17 or 18 or 19-year-old women can't be amazing songwriters. Like, I'm not a huge Billie Eilish fan, but what she's doing is interesting. Or maybe better example, Lauryn Hill. You know what I mean? But I think there's a certain difference between willfully trumpeting that you like music aimed at 17-year-old girls as opposed to just liking a artist because they are an interesting and good artist.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's talk about someone that is the exact opposite of that. Nick Blinko of Rudimentary Peni. This is off Pope Adrian 37 Psychiatriatric, an album written while he was in the mental ward against his own will, mind you, where he was having hallucinations where he thought he was Pope Adrian IV. This is Rudimentary Peni doing the Pope with no name. That was rudimentary peanut. We got a couple more stories to hit, and then we'll wrap this bad boy on up. Londi Hecht of the Muncie Girls, who I think are kind of on hiatus right now, she's released a new single. The single is called Undone, and it's off her upcoming album, Going to Hell. The EP is called Gigantic Disappointment, rather. I got that totally wrong. I'm sorry. It is off her new album, Going to Hell. I was right. All right. Fine. It's out in January. Hecht is kind of she's getting more buzz than almost the Muncie Girls got. A lot of the punk news people are big fans of this. A lot of people in general are big fans of this. This record might pop. It's coming out on Get Better Records, and people are excited. Hallie and Adam and Hallie, what's your stance on Undone?
Oh, I liked it. I was listening to the verse first, obviously, because that's how most songs work. And then I was like, oh, this is pretty good. And then she hit that chorus and it hit me square in the jaw. I thought it was like really, really good. So yeah, I enjoyed this. And I'm a Muncie Girls fan. So if you're a fan of what she was doing with her band, I think you're going to love this solo stuff. Adam, what did you think?
Yeah, I'm a Muncie Girls fan. This is cool. I'm so curious as to as to whether her doing this solo as opposed to with the band has anything to do with their prior label situation or anything like that. There were a handful of bands that kind of all in the same era were signed to a label out of Toronto. It's not a secret, called Buzz Records, and a lot of those bands sort of vanished right at around the same time after their sort of like initial stuff came out on Buzz. And only in the last like 4 to 6 months, I've seen a lot of those artists like all of a sudden reemerge and start doing their own things. And like, I have no inside knowledge or anything, but it really feels like something was going on. There was some contract issue or something, because, it's super, super curious to me that all these bands just sort of like fell into a void all at the same time. And Muncie Girls were definitely like the last signed band out of that time. They put out their, 2017, 2018 record. So, but yeah.
2018.
But anyways, not to just spread rumors, but that's what was going through my head. This is cool. I like this.
There you have it. Speaking of the exact, I thought it was cool. I thought the course was great, and it's interesting and cool, and I dig it. Let's talk about the champion, man. King Yellow Man, Jamaican legendary artist, dancehall legend, putting out stuff from the late 70s, rose to prominence in the 80s, had his biggest fame from 80 to 88. Massive dancehall champion, King Yellow Man. He put out an album last year called No More War, and just recently he put out a video for Kiss Me Each Morning, which is a cover. And I don't know if you guys want me to riff on Yellow Man, or you guys want to respond to Yellow Man first.
No, tell us all about Yellow Man.
So listen, Yellow Man is, so if people don't know, Yellow Man was born in Jamaica. He has albinism, and in Jamaica, even now, but back then especially, that was like a big, like, if you had albinism in late 70s, early 80s in Jamaica, then you were basically shunned. And he was shunned and picked on, and he talks about that a lot. And then he was put up for adoption. No, what do you call it when you get left in like the nun's convent? That's not like put up for adoption. That's whatever that is.
You're like left in an orphanage, right?
Right. He was put in an orphanage.
He was like abandoned. Yeah.
Right. At age 5, so not like age 1, you don't even really know what's going on. Like at age 5, he's like abandoned, right? And so he grows up in the orphanage. He never gets adopted because he's an albino, and he also suffers from Marfan syndrome, sadly. So anyways, he's like, well, I'm just going to become a dancehall guy. And so like he puts out, he's put out like 20 albums or more, but he's put out hundreds and hundreds of singles. We are still discovering singles now that he put out in like 80, 81 that no one knew about, except for at that time period. And he's got hit after hit after hit. Zunga, 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 zang. Galong, galong, galong. Nobody Move, Nobody Gets Hurt. Mr. Chin. Rats. Ganja Runner. Just amazing track after amazing track. And also to his credit is he has a very wide range of songs. Sometimes he sings, sometimes he chats, sometimes he has very funny songs, sometimes he has very moving songs. There's even Tide Fire, which is one of his first tracks, which is about an orphanage catching fire. And he talks about how he was born an albino. Without question, one of the greatest musicians of all time, singers of all time. So anyway, he gets actually like really famous as a dance hall guy. Then at the height of his fame, he gets cancer of the jaw. And the doctor says, you've got like 3 weeks to live. There's nothing I can do. You're going to die. Sorry. And he's like, I'm not going to die. So he goes to another doctor. And the doctor says, well, I might be able to remove half your jaw. It's really experimental, but we can give it a shot if you want. So he does it. A singer, mind you, gets this done. He gets half his jaw removed. He heals and he keeps singing. Then after that, his regular co-singer, Fathead, gets shot to death because it turns out that he was an international cocaine trafficker, which Yellow Man didn't know about. Then Yellow Man gets cancer a second time, and the doctor's like, yeah, you're going to die. And Yellow Man's like, no, I'm not. And he beats cancer a second time. I think he might have even gotten cancer like a third time. And so, you know, everyone in their life has felt down. You know, and everyone's like, you know, oh, the world's out to get me, you know. And sometimes it certainly is legitimate to sometimes feel sorry for yourself and sometimes feel bad. That's certainly a legitimate feeling. However, there is inspiration out there, your parents. And if you don't have your parents, then look to Yellow Man. Yellow Man had everything stacked against him, everything. He's an he's a minority. He's an albino. He had Marfan syndrome. He had fatal cancer twice. His musical partner was shot to death by cocaine dealers. And every single time, he's like, I'm not going to quit. I'm Yellow Man. I'm going to keep going. And not only that, it's honestly, like, as you can hear in this video, like, I've seen him live about five times, and it is the most high-energy show I've ever seen. And the reason it's such a high-energy show is because sometimes his voice doesn't work because, like he had cancer of the throat. I think that was, like, the third time. And so, like, sometimes you hear him, and his voice is at, like, 90%, and he sounds great. Sometimes you go, and his voice is at, like, 5%, and he sounds like this, and that's all you can hear. And a lot of people would say, "Why he needs to give it up. You know, he should quit." I think it's amazing that even when his voice is at about 5%, he keeps going. Even though he's a singer, he won't let failure of his voice stop him. And that's why on stage, he like ramps up the energy times five. Like he's essentially doing jumping jacks for like 2.5 hours straight. He's jumping. He's doing jumping jacks. He's doing high kicks. He's doing push-ups. It is an amazing live show. He's such an inspiration. And as you can see in this video, his voice isn't great. You can tell that they're doing effects to like really like increase the strength of his voice, because in this particular video his voice isn't at full power. So hey, I think the song is cool and good and fun. I love when Yellow Man covers like songs from the 50s and 60s because he does that a lot. But more so, I just think it's a real testament to the willpower of humanity that despite the things that Yellow Man has faced, he's still doing his thing 40 years later. And honestly, he looks pretty cool doing it. And Yellow Man's the man.
I disagree.
Yeah, I don't.
I don't know.
Can you imagine if you were like, "I'm not impressed"? No, go ahead, Adam.
No, I don't. I hope when I'm that age, I have like a cool green suit and I can just, you know, this is slick looking crew in this video here.
I didn't know a lot about Yellow Man, but I do know this song because this song is like great. It's been recorded as a country song, a doo-wop song. The version I feel like I know is like a soul rendition from like the 60s, like really, really beautiful with like a female singer. I should have looked it up. But I love that this song like now has like another genre that it gets to like live in for a little while. I think it's like really a testament to how just like a great melody and great lyrics is just like transcends genre. I really enjoyed listening to this.
Yeah, listen, people, if you get a chance, I mean, I know I think Shut Down, but if you get a chance to see Yellow Man, you have got to go. It's like a 2.5 hour show, which is crazy. But it's awesome. I've seen him like five times. Yellow Man's the man. Let's wrap this up with one other, perhaps lesser known band, Pylons. If you ask some people are like, oh, Pylon, is the band. They're technically broke. They've technically been broken up since like the early 80s. I think one member has passed away, but they still tour, I think, as the Pylon Reenactment Society, which I think is kind of like, it basically is Pylon without one of the main members. So they're the Pylon Reenactment Society, which I think is funny and cool. And the way to keep touring and not try to convince people that you're like, you know, the Dead Kennedys without Jello or something like that. So anyways, they have two albums, and for a while those albums were out on CD, but those albums would go for like $60 each because they were out of print. Well, just recently, Pylon re-released pretty much their entire discography, and Pylon is from Georgia. They were actually kind of from the same scene as REM, although they're actually slightly before REM, and a lot of people think Pylon should have been gigantic. It's kind of like post-punkish. It kind of reminds me of maybe the Slits, maybe Raincoats, but also kind of like Liquid in that early dance stuff, and so Pylon's material is available once again, and you can get it for a relatively cheap price, especially on CD. The record's a little bit more expensive. But Pylon is back, and Pylon – well, they're not back, but the records are back and sounding good. What do you guys think of Pylon?
John, I'll tell you the truth. I didn't listen to all 47 songs in their discography before this podcast because I was cleaning paint off the floor. But but Pylon is – one of these bands that is constantly spoken about in glowing terms by, you know, people that are the in the know kind of tastemaker kind of, you know, people like the fucked up guys talk about them all the time. They're a band that I totally need to check out, and this is probably the opportunity to do it. So I'm gonna feign ignorance, but I'll fix that.
Yeah, it's like for a fan, it's like very Athens, right? It's like for fans of like B-52s, like that, I don't know, that like corner of new wave. I'm excited that, you know, maybe by putting some of this stuff out again, or, you know, that like, cause I don't know that much about the Pylon. So I feel like this is a good chance for some of us to like go back and give this stuff like a good, like an actual real listen.
I mean, if you, the Punk News Podcast listener, was trying to decide, you know, if you were really grappling with, should I go check out the Pylon discography, or should I contend with this upcoming Miley Cyrus record, and you could only do one, then go listen to the Pylon stuff. that's all I'm saying. You only have so much time in this world.
That's true. And so speaking of so much time, is Hallie, you have a song, or is it Adam? I forget. It's Hallie, right? You've got a song, right, Hallie?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? Actually, I was going to, I'm going to pivot, because we didn't talk about a thing that we were maybe going to talk about, which was this comp.
Oh, what's
that? The comp that the water company put out.
We got to talk about that.
We lost that.
Yeah,
link.
We got to talk about this. Oh, man, this was actually my number one story of the week. So check this out, people. Check this out. There's a water company called Liquid Death. And what they do is they sell liquid water. They sell water in cans. And I thought they were like, what's the alcoholic seltzer water? Deer?
White Claw.
I thought they were like White Claw, but they're totally not at all. They are a... They sell water in cans for like $4 a can. That's what they do. And like, their entire marketing is almost like purposely ironic. Like, if you go to their website, they're like, people think we're ridiculous. We are. We're not necessary at all. And yet people like buy that. And then I went to their Facebook page. A lot of people I know like Liquid Death. And as one of the commenters pointed out to me, I didn't even know this in the comment section, because what do I know about canned water? They're actually owned by like one of the main Netflix guys and some investors, like, which I didn't know. So anyway, they're putting out a vinyl record called Greatest Hates Volume 2. And the angle of the record is that all the songs are fat wreck type punk songs, but the lyrics are taken from hate comments left on their Facebook and their Twitter and YouTube and wherever. So basically, if someone said Liquid Death is stupid, they wrote a song called Liquid Death is Stupid. It has contributions from members of Lawrence Arms, Rise Against, Alkaline Trio, Bomb Pops, Anti-Flag, Chair, Death by Stereo, Pink Shift, and other acts singing some of these songs. And so the angle that I had is this amusing, interestingly, meta commentary, postmodernist art? Or is this a sneaky company being sneaky and working their way into the underground for a reason that we don't know yet again? And what's their sinister motive? And so I definitely lean more one way than the other with regards to this. But how do you guys feel about this record? Is this cool and interesting, or is this sneaky, shady marketing, or neither?
I mean, I thought like the punk news, people commenting on the article, and people were very upset at this water company. They were very upset about it. I don't have time to be upset about water. A company that wants to sell water in aluminum cans. My life is really too short for me to worry about that. But I do think that like internet comments are just one of the absolute worst things about being alive right now. Just like rotten internet comments, and the fact that this company like just it sort of embraced all the hate that they were getting online and had people write songs like directly quoting all of this criticism that they've gotten. I just think that's hilarious. That really entertains me. That makes me very happy to come up with something positive and creative from hateful internet comments. I'm all about it. Adam, what's your take on water aluminum can punk?
I'm too fucked up by like 90s anti-corporatism to not look at this and think that it smells funny. I don't get why. Like, I think that like what bothers me almost isn't that it is ultimately for the benefit of a corporation, but it bothers me that I feel like I'm being sold to, like I'm being target marketed by it. It bugs me more than it is that this is a corporation. Like, so it's not even a sellout thing. It's just sort of like I see what you're doing, fuck off kind of reaction to it. Because like the one thing that this company's marketing has sort of been predicated on is that they're trying to do a very like overly aggressive alcohol style marketing strictly for something that isn't. And a big part of their shtick is that, oh, well, they're trying to market to like, to, you know, straight edge people that might be in the same sort of situation where people might be, you know, buying, consuming alcohol, and you want to give them something that has, you know, like a little bit of that brand cachet to it. Right. And like, maybe, but that like you can, I feel like, you can poke all sorts of holes in that as a business model. And just because of that, I'm just like, it just seems like, I don't know. Like it feels like I'm being sold to in a way that I don't, like, I'm not straight edge. They're not targeting me. Right. But I've seen this company show up as like the targeted Facebook ad for me for the better part of a year. And I've been trying to parse out what bugs me about it, because I recognize that it's 2020. Bands aren't getting paid for anything. So you can't operate by the same sort of like mid-90s rules about what's sellout and what's not. Like earlier in the week, there was some news that like a Dirty Nil song was in a Mercedes commercial, and it did not bug me in the least. I was just like, oh, good. Those guys got paid. They haven't been able to tour all year, so it's nice that they got paid. Like, did not bother me that, you know, band was in that thing. And every year for the past 2 or 3 years, I've done like a punk news promotion with a brewery that is in Ontario here. So I'm, and you know, a bunch of bands play a stage that is, you know, like ostensibly there to sell beer at a certain level of it. And that doesn't bother me either, but there's something about like that brewery that we do those promotions with, like they're not trying to brand and sell all their stuff as like, oh, look how punk and metal we are. Like, the fuck, their brand is like, you know, tractors and farmland and stuff like that. It just happens to be a company that's owned and run by a bunch of guys that were in punk bands, which is why I'm associated with them. And there's something about this where I'm looking at it and I'm like, so it's a Netflix designer and then like a bunch of venture capital scumbags, and they're selling something that has like a bunch of like alternative culture imagery wrapped up in it to so I don't know, like via like targeted social media marketing to people. And now they've made a snarky, ironic compilation where they've looped in a bunch of bands. I don't know. It's like the whole thing. And I'm just like, fuck off. That's my reaction. It's just fuck off. I want no part of this. There's not enough time to have to deal with this bullshit. No. I say no.
Who's spending like $2 for a can of water? Like, for real?
It seems like a totally questionable thing. But you know what? I get the argument why you might want to have in a situation where, say, like, you know, people are in a bar style situation or a club style situation. You want to have things that are available maybe it costs more than the same product that you get out of a tap for free, but you don't feel like a 5-year-old with a juice cup to have like a little plastic cup of water. Like I get why there might
it's
be some.
It's fun. You say, first of all, anybody that worries about that, what other people might think about what they're drinking needs to check themselves a little bit. No one cares.
I'm trying to get the argument, right? I can maybe see why there's a place for those kinds of products. Although, yeah, like, I mean, to like water, like, again, like what water, what water is water. Like, we're privileged enough to live in parts of the world where the water that comes out of our taps, I guess, unless you live in like Flint, is, you know, of a spectacularly well-maintained quality and free. So, you know, why you would try to package that up and sell it to people is a little bit bewildering to me. But hey, I'm not a successful business person, so maybe that I'm just a dummy. But that's not even what bothers me. It's just like there's just something about the branding on this, or I'm just like I don't want to be in on the joke. Like, I don't want to be cute with this. Just like you can by all means earn my attention, but don't like get all my favorite artists to like shill for you. Like, no. Adam says no.
Howie, Adam is saying no. Do you have a song that says yes?
I do have a song that says yes. It's the opening track to this compilation. I think it's just so catchy. I'm totally into it. I think it's a little hard on Spotify. It just because it's a compilation, it doesn't list all of the individual artists. I'm pretty sure this is Bomb Pops because it sounds exactly like Bomb Pops to me. If it's not, someone can correct me. But this first song off this comp is called Rather Murder Myself, which is clearly from like a nasty internet comment they got. And I think it's catchy. I'm into it. I would never buy the water, but I like the song.
And that was Rather Murder Myself by the Bomb Pops, working for Liquid Death. Adam White, any last comments, anything you think, what kind of water should people buy?
Go to your tap, turn the tap, get the water out of the tap, pay your water bill. So I guess like the city's water? Yeah, the city.
Well, I've got a well, Adam, and let me tell you, once you go well, you never go back, man. Well water is delicious, tasty, and you don't have to pay anybody for it. Hallie Bullock, where should people buy their water in 2020?
I don't know, but I grew up on a well, and we would run out of water sometimes when I was mid-shower, so why not? I don't want to be on a well ever again. I don't know, where should people get their water? I just fill my reusable water bottle because I'm that kind of a nerd.
Well, all's well that ends well. We'll see you next week.
Oh.